Good morning, everybody. My name is Dave Marquez, recovered alcoholic.
Good day.
Here we are, last session, step 12. Last but not least. The first thing I would like to say about what I've experienced here is you guys have all been great. This has been a great function, Terry. Everybody else has helped put it on, participated. You've been interested. You've paid attention. To me, this is a lay down right here. I mean, this is where you work at all the others. You get to come to something like this, and this is just a lay down to me. This is so easy. I told you about some of these groups back home that asked me to do these big book studies, which would last anywhere from 6 months to nine months or so, however long it took us to get through the first 164 pages. And one of those groups had been around for about 15 years. And the GSR asked me if I'd come in their group and do a big book study because they had nobody in their group qualified, and they had taken group conscious that they wanted to do that. And non-informed group conscious, they had no idea what that looked like. Right? And so I said, sure. They said, well, he says, so you got to come down to the big business meeting so they can at least meet you and vote you in to do it and all this other stuff. And I said, great. And so I got there a little early, like I always do to a meeting, and I'm just kind of looking around, and it's right after a meeting, regular meeting that they had. I don't see any big books. I see them putting stuff away in a cupboard, so I figure, well, there's probably some big books in the cupboard. So I walk over to the cupboard, and there's no big books in the cupboard. And so I go to the guy, and I said, so these guys are going to bring their own big books, or your group have big books? And he said, no, we don't have big books. I said, so they're going to bring their own. I said, well, he says, well, probably most of these guys don't have their own big books. I said, I don't normally make a condition on carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. But in this business meeting, we're going to make a motion that you guys order a case of big books. The group voted it down.
Wow.
That's right. The guy came out of his own pocket, bought a case of books for the meeting. They voted for the meeting, but they weren't going to invest in the books. Right? Guy came out of pocket, right? And that was 9 months of Braveheart. A lot of hack and slash, boy. And I made amends for not being that way, and at times I was that way, And I'll never forget the secretary sitting next to me. I don't know, we were about a month into it, and she just turned around and wheeled around at me, and she goes, are you trying to tell us that we're doing it all wrong? And I said, if the shoe fits. Jeez. So this has been great. This is a lay down. So I impart to people what has been imparted to me. I impart to people what I trust that God wants me to impart to them. I sponsor people, and sometimes it'll be multiple people, they're all in the same spot. And then they get together at the meeting and they talk like a bunch of little hens, right? Like this. And then one of them will come up to me and says, how come you didn't tell me that thing in step two that you told him over there? Because it wasn't meant for you. It's not like it's scripted, right? I used to be a cookie cutter sponsor, right? Because that's just how I sponsored. That's how I was taught to be sponsored. And I used to be cookie cutter. Very little intuitive thought. It was a lot of information and me just burying you, okay? And then if you didn't get on board, then there was something wrong with you, okay? Book talks about not doing that, actually. They want to do it some other way. Let them go do it some other way. But explain to them how some other way may not work, but let them have their druthers, you know? So one of the things that happened to me when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous in Hawaii is that I really had a tough time with meetings. I couldn't tell what the message was or wasn't because what people were sharing was all over the map, and they called it AA. And, you know, we talk about the desperation of a drowning man. I'm trained to save drowning people in the Marine Corps. You know what drowning people do when you try to save them? They try to kill you. Okay? So I don't know that I'm dying. But something down deep inside knows I'm dying. And so I come into a place that's supposed to be throwing me a life preserver. And I'm getting bent out of shape because I'm scared to death and I'm going to die right here in front of you because I can't get the help you say that is here. And thank God for the minority of guys that took me under their wing and said, hey, thank God for my roommate. Thank God for God getting my roommate sober 10 months earlier than me coming to AA with some guys that took him under their wing out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you know what they did after every meeting? We went to a coffee shop. They'd throw me in a corner so I couldn't escape. And they would, all of us, it wasn't just me, they weren't buried in on me, but not who said it, but what did you hear said in the meeting? What's the big book say? And although at the time I didn't think I needed to do what was in this book, it at least exposed me to the truth of what Alcoholics Anonymous was, or what it is and what it isn't. Okay? And just that exercise on a daily basis after meetings calmed me down a bunch to where I could at least sit in meetings and not totally hate your guts and feel like you were a threat to my life. Okay? I do that with people today when I have time. I don't have as much time as I have had in the past and being on the road, but we will get together and what did you hear in the meeting? You know, get them calmed down. Get them to actually see what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? I caught fire. I went through the steps the first time in 10 days. Okay? I was in 9 on day 8 or 9. I came down, begged my sponsors, take these steps. We spent that weekend. It was a weekend. We spent that weekend doing 1, 2, and 3. He sent me home to write inventory. It wasn't the greatest inventory. I used the Joe and Charlie worksheets. That's what he had done, and that's what he gave me. It did the job. Okay? I came back that weekend, 5, 6, 7, spent the night at his house, kicked me out the door with an 8-step list, and off I went. Okay? And I was on fire. And started sponsoring a couple guys. And I was living in a small mountain town. I was always having to travel down to Fresno, about a 30, 40-minute drive. And I'm used to small-town AA. And I got tired of that drive for, you know, just to get a big book meeting. And it just hit me, start one. In this group up here with these guys. And I'm... You know, I'm too crazy to be afraid. You know, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And I didn't know that these guys didn't want a big book meeting. And so as I started bringing it up in a business meeting, I found out really quick. They weren't interested in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went to the school that we had the meeting in, and I knew that we'd have a meeting on Friday night. That particular group didn't. And I secured the room for a Friday night big book meeting. These old guys that were in this little small town AA group said, "Oh, big book meetings never make it around here. They'll die." And you're trying to do it on Friday night, and the only thing that happens on Friday night in that mountain town is high school football. That's it. You know, high school basketball, high school football. You're not gonna. You know, we all go there. Okay. And I said, "Well, I'm not asking for permission. I'm just telling you it's going to happen." Okay. I'm just wondering if you wanted to be part of your group and you want some Seven Tradition or not. Well, that perked their ears up because they wanted that money. You want the Seven Tradition. Yeah, and the first night we had, there's generally about 10 people that show up at the other meetings. So we had 4 or 10. A couple weeks later, we had everybody there. You know? And later, you know, back in the Vision for You, it talks about you may be what be maybe but one man with this book in your hand, and using that and the power of God to watch the fellowship that you crave grow up around you. And that has been the story of my sobriety ever since, good, bad, or indifferent. And there's another part in Vision for You that talks about the things that are so important to most people are no longer important to us. I'm 25 years old. I'm shot out of a cannon into the fourth dimension, and all I care about is saving drunk souls. That's all I care about. I want to be self-supporting, but other than that, I could care less. All I want to do is save souls, and I spent the first, more or less, 8, 9, 10 years of sobriety doing that. Until God tapped me on the shoulder and says, there's another part of this book called The Last Four Chapters that you're not engaged in. And it came on the heels of a discussion. I got to go out to the Colorado State Convention after Don P. died, and Gary was out there, and Bob was out there. And I got to have a sit-down with Gary one time, and he talked to me a long time. And you know, if you guys don't know, Gary got sober at 24 in 1964. And I'm so grateful for guys that got in this sponsorship family tree that I'm part of that got sober young and became adults in sobriety. Because when I came to AA, I was a never was. I wasn't a has been. I hadn't burned anything. I had nothing to burn down to the ground. Nothing ever got started. And so I was a never was. And Gary was a never was. And you got to become an adult and do adult things in sobriety. And so he started talking to me about power. He started talking to me just like a 2-3-4 hour discussion that changed my whole perspective on things and my realization of a lack of power, you know. And talk to me about newer and finer structures that this book talks about. You know, this initially we come in here, we build this spiritual structure, gets built. But then it goes on to start talking about newer and finer structures that are just as much about God's will as going out and carrying the message, maybe even more so. And he asked me, where's your power to be a present father? Where's your power to be in a relationship? Where's your power to be in a career that you want to be in an employment that you want to be in, not just making a check like Mike talked about? Where's your power to do those things? And it was not there. The structures weren't there. And I had begun to realize shortly after that conversation going home that as noble as being out there and just just trying to save the AA world, that I had begun to hide in Alcoholics Anonymous so that I didn't have to participate and practice these principles in all my affairs. And God was already beginning to tap me on the shoulder and say, I got a whole new circle of life that you are another part of this circle of life that you need to be a part of. And it wasn't without some pain to get there. And it exposed a lot of reliances on the fellowship that I didn't know I had. Things that Don or Don C. or Mark or somebody, Joe, I don't know, calling them pocket gods, you know. All these things that point to God that we rely on and we don't actually rely on God. And whether it's the sponsoring, the service, and all this other stuff. I told you that I got into general service. I've run the gamut on pretty much every service position I could get into. I've come to the conclusion about general service is that having been on both sides, tried both sides of the fence of we don't need it and we do need it. And this is just my opinion and my observation. As big book people, I think we have a blind spot to general service, and me included. At one point, I decided, you know what? All I really need to do is keep this simple and personal. And really what I was saying, I was fed up with general service. That they're a part of this program that is obsolete, which is not accurate. But if we want change in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we want to keep a pyramid that's inverted and not allow the people to take advantage of a bunch of uninformed people about our principles and flip this thing into a pyramid, people like us need to get involved. You want to restore the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, not just one soul at a time, but one group at a time, one community at a time. I believe that we as Big Book people more or less have a blind spot to getting involved in general service. And if more of us would get involved, the more we could start changing some of the ways the votes go, some of the topics that come up that we vote on. And I've come full circle on that. I actually fell away from general service and pretty much put up a middle finger to it for years. And the more I see, I believe we just need to get involved more in general service. I was heavily involved in H&I. I loved H&I. After a while, I began to realize that there wasn't one person I met I had shared a message with in H&I for 5 years, and I actually saw in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I began to realize that there were a lot of people already in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that were already either new or been there a while, and already there, sick and suffering, needing help. And I just felt intuitively that God wanted me to dump that H&I commitment. And anybody that knows the people that rely on H&I is because more people stay sober. 95% of the people stay sober that do H&I, because that's what they'll tell you. These guys had a fit when I dropped that. Oh, you're going to get drunk. They told me all this. I said, well, you better tell God about all that. And then they gave me the statistic, and I said, well, 100% of people stay sober that do this. There's a promise in there, we agnostics, about if we take a certain attitude, it cannot fail. I said, I'm just going to roll with that one. You know? God bless you. Whatever service niche God wants you in, God bless you. But the point is, find it. If I had more time, I would love to dive back into general service. Okay? I was on a fourth edition committee. I was on a fourth edition literature committee on whether we needed it or didn't need it. Our committee felt we didn't need it. I've been on a committee where we decided to take a look at all the pamphlets. Look at all the pamphlets and see how accurate they are, how they really line up to this piece of literature, because it seemed like a lot of people were getting confused by what was in the pamphlets and what's in this book. Done that. So the work where I seem to have grown the most is, like Peterik said, is that one-on-one work across the table with another alcoholic. I just want to touch on the last four chapters. I've never heard many people actually talk about the last four chapters in workshops. And I think, as you can see, we've had 8 sessions or so. We're out of time. And there's 64 more pages left in this book that you could talk about. And there's so much information condensed in the last four chapters. It's so dense with principles that you could spend a weekend just on the last four chapters. But most mainstream meetings that I go to, and even some Big Book meetings I go to, treat the last four chapters as if it's some kind of filler or like some kind of redundancy of the first 103 pages. And I'm here to suggest to you that it's not. It's a continuation. It is following the directions of the last principle of the 12th step as we read it on the chart, practicing these principles in all our affairs. You know, a lot of people like to say, oh, there's 53 pages committed to the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous. It must be important. Well, there's 65 pages committed to the last principle of the 12th step. So that must be pretty important too, if not more so. Okay. I'm gonna share with you a line from Two Wives that makes Two Wives relevant to everybody in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? and it's right on 104. They lead with it. It's in the third paragraph. Among us are wise relatives and friends whose problem has been solved, as well as some who have not yet found a happy solution. We want the wise of Alcoholics Anonymous to address the wise of men who drink too much. Here it is. What they say will apply to nearly everyone bound by ties of blood or affection to an alcoholic. How many of you sponsor? How many of you consider sponsorship an intimate relationship? Sometimes more intimate than with the person you're married to or significant other. Is that not a tie of blood or affection? Mm-hmm. Okay. I've never been married. I never picked up two wives until I started finding out the trouble I had later on in sobriety about 5 years with my father, who's an alcoholic, just like Tarek. And you know what? I started seeing that same kind of trouble with the way I sponsored. And you know what Twise did? When I started seeing myself as the wife to the people that I sponsored, maybe a sharper sponsor. It cleaned up a lot of stuff between my dad and I. I'll never forget. My dad continued to drink well into my sobriety. Never forget. I was so detached from his alcoholism by the time he did this on me. I'm visiting him. He's on the recliner. He pops out of the recliner. He comes to the kitchen. I'm already in the kitchen. I'm just visiting him. And he says, he's just messing around like this. And he looks at me. He goes, hey. And I go, what? And he goes, I'm going into rehab. Right? I go, what, is it your knee again? Right? He goes, no, I'm going in tomorrow morning. I said, you're just laying there on the recliner right there? You just decided you're going to go to the VA and check into rehab? I mean, like that? You know? And you know, my initial, you know, if that had happened when I was 5 years sober and I was starting to wake up to really the real problems I was having with my dad, I would have buried him. I would have told him how rehab doesn't work. I mean, you know, I just would have told him a bunch of BS information trying to control how he ought to get sober. And I didn't do that. You know, for 5 years I saw thousands and thousands of alcoholics in meetings, sponsored people, all that stuff, and could see them as sick alcoholics and still see my dad as an asshole and not as a sick alcoholic. And today I don't even look at my dad as a sick alcoholic. I look at him as my dad. I remember one time my mom is an untreated Al-Anon forever. Okay? She's been to meetings. She understands the steps. You heard this before? But she's sick as the day she ever walked into Al-Anon. And she has been 5150. She doesn't drink, but she's been 5150 at least 5 times that I know of for being suicidal, untreated Al-Anonism. Okay?
What does that mean?
Suicidal. Has to be hospitalized so she doesn't kill herself. I remember one time I was over there and she was pissed off that my dad had been drinking and was trying to throw it in his face and get me on board to co-sign it. And this is long. I'm way free of this. And I just looked at her and I said, I don't really care what dad does or doesn't do with alcohol. All I want to do is be a son to him. And if he would stop drinking, that would be great because maybe he'd be around longer. But if he doesn't, that's whatever. She just flipped because I wouldn't get on board, you know, and with the blame. And it plays a role with my son. I'm going to jump over to a line in Family Afterward, 2 lines. Second paragraph, 123. Family confidence in dad is rising high. The good old days will soon be back. They think sometimes they demand that dad bring them back instantly. God, they believe, almost owes this recompense on a long overdue account. But the head of the house has spent years in pulling down the structures of business, romance, friendship, health. These things are now ruined or damaged. It will take time to clear away the wreck. The old buildings will eventually be replaced by finer ones. The new structures will take years to complete. That will not happen if you're buried in 10, 14 meetings a week. And if you load yourself up on service commitments where you cannot practice these principles in all your affairs. That will not happen. Way early in the book, it talks about the most important demonstration of these principles, and it is our occupations, homes, and affairs. Can't find it, but off the top of my head. So there's a part in Family Afterward that talks about these spiritual principles being brought to the family and practicing these principles with the family. And it goes on to give this real subtle warning that whether the family gets on board or not, the alcoholic has to, or else pay the price. This book will constantly bring you back to step one. Right? If you don't do this, you're probably going to drink again. So to me, practicing these principles in all our affairs is just as much about not drinking ever again, having this open channel between me and God that separates me from alcohol as any other step. When I work with somebody, I don't fluff it up. I don't wait till they feel better to work steps. The book tells me the more hopeless they feel, the better. The Family Afterward talks about, you know, don't wrap them in wool and put them up there like on a pedestal because he's sober. He said the opposite works better. And that's, I sponsor that way too. I'm not heavy-handed, but I'm not going to kiss their ass either. Okay? And I tell them the truth. You want to know why I do this over and over and over and seek to continue to grow spiritually? Is because alcoholism, whether I drink or not, is progressive and fatal. And if I don't continue to be willing to grow spiritually, and I say at some point, this is enough spiritual growth, spirituality doesn't care if I do that by accident or on purpose. At some point, that progressive spiritual malady will just roll right over the top of me and it wins. And I don't have the power to know when that's going to happen. And when it happens, I don't have the power to stop it. This process, and continuing on and practicing these principles in all our affairs, keeps this channel open so I continue to grow spiritually. I don't want to say I'm spiritual enough. This is good enough. Okay. Last thing on vision for you. I always thought it was kind of weird, you know. Vision for you just seemed like the four to the second edition, just put in the back. Right? And I finally caught on to a line on page 153. At the bottom of what Bill was trying to do here, Vision for You, second to last paragraph. It says, suppose now that through you several families have adopted this way of life. Catch this. You will want to know more of how to proceed from that point. Like that's not enough, right? God has brought me so far down the scale so that my dark past of alcoholism can be the most powerful asset I have to have a key for life and happiness for another alcoholic and their family. Hand them that key so they can avert death and misery. We are given that kind of power. In the book, Bill's saying, but you're probably going to want to know what more you can do. Right? Not really, but okay. I'm willing. says, perhaps the best way of treating you to a glimpse of your future. Then he goes into the history. What's he telling you in this glimpse of my future? He tells me the history again, right? Somebody came to him. He went to somebody. They went to a somebody. They went to a somebody. And all of a sudden there was a fellowship in Akron. He went back to New York. He went to a somebody. He went to a somebody. There's a fellowship in New York. Somebody left Cleveland, or left Akron for Cleveland, and got a somebody, got another somebody, right? And then there was a fellowship. And the rest of the vision for you is really an outline about how to build the fellowship around you that you crave. And I start to ask myself, is that happening to me? Am I willing to do that? What's that have to do with whether I drink alcohol again or not? I don't know. But I'm going to get out there and do it, and I'm going to get out there and try it. I just am not satisfied to be the guy in Alcoholics Anonymous that just kind of sits back and just kind of watch AA go by. I'm just not that guy. I've never been that guy in any walk of life. I just kind of have to be out there in front sometimes. Right? Through this process and through being open to what religious people may have to offer, different venues of caring, gathering up alcoholics has been presented to me. One of the first things that happened to me was the guy in AA had been converted to the LDS church, and heard my story, and he came up to me and he says, you want to come back to church? And I said, no. And he says, well, it's not how you think. I said, well, how are you thinking? He says, well, I converted 5 years ago, and he says, I started what's called the Adam program in the church. It's Alcohol and Drug Addicted Mormons, 12 Steps Through Christ. And I said, no. And he says, I think you'll be surprised if you just come and help. And I said, my job isn't to be in the place of maximum usefulness to others. Alcoholics may show up. I'm willing to go check it out. So I go check it out. So this starts this whole different avenue for getting alcoholics into my life and helping them. 2 months later, I got an offer to buy an insurance agency in Mormon Mecca, Salt Lake City, Utah. And began to sponsor people through AA, not through the Adam program. And sponsor people that I never would have thought I'd been able to sponsor. Sponsor people and... people talk about living amends, not really big on the whole concept of living amends, but to be able to carry a message of Alcoholics Anonymous to people that fell away from the church like I did, or that are still active but are alcoholic in AA, to me was bringing the whole thing full circle. Okay? And watching them go back into the church and become stronger members than they'd ever been was a powerful experience. And later on, I had some very powerful experiences around spiritual awakenings around Native American spirituality, and I had this one experience where I felt driven to go back to California, get plugged in back into the Native American community. And I had no idea what this was about. And then I stumbled onto White Bison and the thing that Don C. had started. And I didn't really know Don C. was tied into it. All I know is I was handed the Well Variety program, and I did it as part of an 11-step. And then I applied to be a fire starter for White Bison. I'm not aware that there's any Native American in me at all. I'm a white boy come to this thing, as far as I know. Half Mexican, which is Indian anyway. But and so I don't think it's going to be accepted. And I got a call from Don C. and says, you've been accepted as a fire starter. And then that's when we really realized that we had been in several different roundups and talked a few times. And he just hadn't remembered my name, and we got talking. And so I was able to take not only AA, but Wellbriety back into White Bison, into the Native American communities that I drank at, that I was raised around, and be able to hook into people that way. So God has opened up a lot of different venues. We don't have a monopoly on recovery. We don't have a monopoly on God. And if people come here to Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is what I want to convey to you, is that they're looking for Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's my duty to give that to them. And if I'm not giving that to them, I'm doing a disservice. Okay. In these other venues, if what they're asking for is that stuff, then that's what I give them. But this is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the only thing that's really ever worked for me. And we owe it to everybody that's walking in that door to give them the best opportunity at Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't let anybody ever tell you you're not unique. The book is very clear that we are uniquely useful with other alcoholics. That we are given a gift that nobody else is given, to work with other alcoholics and bring them to God, get them reconnected to God, and so they can live a happy, productive, useful life in sobriety. And that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, David. My name is Mike Shane. I'm still an alcoholic. Thank you, Brandon. This has been great. I sort of feel like I'm at the special ops of AA here.
Nice.
When I stand up to do my inventory pitch at Big Book Workshops and I put out what's self-esteem, nobody knows. Well, that's how I feel. And everybody in this room goes, estimation of myself. And I'm going, yeah, baby. This is easy. I totally agree with Dave. Thank you very much for inviting me down here. And I'm glad, you know, Bob really talked you guys up and said to come down here. I quit doing this for a few years because I had to take care of my other responsibilities. And, I think you can hide out in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think you can hide out in meetings and not take care of the responsibilities in your life. And I spoke at 16 conventions one year and a couple of Big Book workshops, and the next thing I saw is my business falling apart and my daughter was going through tough times, and it started to cost me in my life, and I had to go back in and get away from this to focus in on that and do the real work in Alcoholics Anonymous, as far as I'm concerned, which is sitting right here at a table across from a guy and taking him through the 12 steps of AA. I think that's where the real work comes. I think that's the foundation stone of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you take a look at the 12 steps, the 12th step, it says, having had a spiritual awakening. Right? So I started drinking at 13 years old. I'm like Dave, and I'm like a couple other people in here. I didn't have to worry about jobs and 401ks. I never had anything like that. I mean, the love of my life was the head stripper at the bar I worked at. I mean, I never built up anything to tear it back down. I never did. I learned to be a man in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did not catch Alcoholics Anonymous in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not where I caught it. I caught Alcoholics Anonymous by working the steps with people and by hanging out with people and seeing how these guys would go through things. And thank God, these people And I almost feel like I'm name dropping in this group, but these were my friends when I came in. These were my, this was my crew, okay? Thank God these guys opened their life up to me. See, when I 12-step somebody, when I sponsor somebody, it's not about teaching them. It's about allowing them in also to give them the dignity to make their own mistakes. It's about letting them get to know me as a human being. When I sponsor people, trust me, I share what's going on in my life, good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, I love it when you're sober as long as I am and some guy comes up to you and he goes, take me through the steps, and he really thinks he's going to get, you know, learn the secret code, you know. And you sit there and you go, I'm not, but I mean, you know, you sit there and you go, well, I'm going broke or I'm getting divorced and this is the way it is, but I can sure as hell show you a way to stay sober that's going to work for the rest of your life. That's what I can show you through thick and thin. And these guys did. They opened their life up. And I got to see these people like Pritz and Brown and Frank and all these guys go through just, you know, horrendous stuff. But they were always out there taking people through the work. They were always in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they had ups and downs like every human being under the sun. And when I got sober, one of the things I liked about it was, you know, the treatment centers, I think, have taken the smell of alcohol out of AA. I loved it when I got sober because the guy sitting next to me probably half of the time was shaking and smelled bad. And when you'd get up to do the Lord's Prayer at the end, his hands, you could barely hold on to them. They were so sweaty. And the treatment centers have taken the smell of alcohol out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so what has a lot of people done in AA is they think they've done a great 12-step call when they pick somebody up and take them to a treatment center and dump them off. Well, I've done my job. Another thing that kills me are people that have been around for a while and they've been through the steps and they have recovery to a degree. And they go, I don't have anything to give anybody. What a cop-out. I call them AA thieves. Come in here and you get this thing because we gave it to you and now you're not willing to give it away. Just get the hell away from me. I don't want nothing to do with you. I'm a bit opinionated. Skittle. I didn't have any Skittles this morning. So what's happened in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I have seen is that everybody's learned the lingo. And it's become this deal where people know how to play the game. But how many people here have really gone into meetings outside of your little group here and heard people talk, give a straight message out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Not many. Not too many. So the big book says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message, not my message, this message, to other alcoholics, right? And to practice these principles in all our affairs. But the thing that I'm so concerned about these days is, do I carry a clear message? Do I carry the message out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which we've all been talking about? And I sort of feel like I'm preaching to the choir here. And as Dave said very well, you go into some of these workshops and it's almost like you're going into a fighter's ring. It's MMA. I mean, it really is. People are standing up in your face saying, what do you mean, you know, if I don't do this, right? And I think that at least since I've been sober, and I'm not an AA cop anymore, I used to be. But I've really come to find out that the message of Alcoholics Anonymous has gotten lost. I've walked into meetings all over this country, and people are going, I'm 25 years sober, and my daughter yelled at me today, and I think I might want to go have a drink. And I'm going, what kind of a message is that? You know, I didn't come in here to stay sick. I didn't come in here to fight alcohol. I did not come into Alcoholics Anonymous in order to be 20 years sober, fighting to drink and staying sick and being all wrapped up in myself. That's not what I came here for. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous because certain people gave me a very clear message, and since the time I've been sober, these people have truly carried a very clear and precise message of how to get well and how to carry this message to the next person. See, I'm a believer that the only reason I'm alive is to carry a message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Now, I need to work, and I need to take care of my family obligations, and I need to take care of this and that. But that's the only reason God kept me alive. I should have been dead so many times, I can't even tell you. So why am I sitting here? Is it because I'm better than that guy out there? No. No. It's because somebody took the time to hand me the Get Well card. That's what they did. And I signed up for it. Right? So what's my job? Carrying this message. Dave talked really well about practicing these principles in all your affairs. And I want to just focus in a little bit about, do I carry a clear message? You know, if you read the 12th step in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's the greatest sales tool you'll ever read. They tell you precisely how to do this deal. Exactly how to do it. Bring them in, man. Share your confidences. Share your experience. Get a bond. Then lay it on him, right? You know, I mean, it's what every salesman out there has been taught to do. Bill was the kind of guy that he was a salesman. And thank God for Bill Wilson. You know, given all of his flaws, he was the guy that went out there and he wanted to be the spearhead, and God used him to promote AA. And if it was left up to Dr. Bob, nobody would have ever heard of us. You know? But they carried a clear message. And thank God for the people that carry a clear message. And I'm going to tell you what I think we can do as individuals. I'm not on a crusade, because it doesn't work. I've seen people on crusades. And you know what you do when you're on a crusade is you shut the other person down just like that. It's just like coming in up to somebody and telling them, boy, you really are screwed up, right? First thing they're going to do is shut down. You're not going to get anywhere with them. Here's what I got. I can share my experience. But do I have the courage to share my experience? When I'm sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that the last thing anybody really wants to hear about is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and believe me, that happens a lot, do I have the courage to share my conviction? I'm going to tell you a story. Back when I got sober, when you came into 1311 York Street whining about whatever problem of the day you happened to have, they used to, there'd be 10, 15 people in there shaking it out. They hadn't been taken out to the treatment centers because there weren't many treatment centers. And all these guys would do is they'd say, go help that guy over there. Go help that guy over there. Go help that guy over there. Right? And that's what you did. And one time I went in and I was crying about something. I can't remember what. And Frank said to me, he said, go down to Denver Cares and find somebody that wants to talk to somebody in AA. And I went, all right, I'll go down to Denver Cares. Nobody was at the club. And I went down to Denver Cares. That's the where the, you know, cops in Denver pick you up and throw you in the drunk tank. And there was this guy, and I said, is there anybody that wants to talk to a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? And they said, oh, yeah, there's this guy. He really wants to talk to you. And this guy comes out, and he's got his slippers on and his robe on, right? And he comes out, and he meets me, and he's sitting there, and my life is falling apart. I'm about a year sober, and my life is just falling apart. There isn't a thing going right in my life. And I'm a big believer that we have to hit what's called non-manageability bottom after we've come in here in order to really pick this thing up. And so I'm sitting there with this guy, and I'm pitching him like my life depended on it, right? I mean, I'm just hammering this guy with, you work the steps, you come with me, and you're going to get well, and you never have to be in here again, and this and that and the other thing. And this guy's scratching his ass and looking at the TV over my shoulder and the whole thing. And I left there. And I went, boy, I sure didn't help him, but I sure feel a lot better, right? 5 years later, we had a meeting in Denver down in this one part of town at Wyatt's Cafeteria. It was an all-city speaker meeting, and they would fly in speakers from all over the country to come in and speak. And there'd be 600-700 of us at this meeting every single month. And I was in line, it's a cafeteria, and I was in line getting my food, and this guy comes up to me, and he goes, I've been looking for you for 5 years. He said, you saved my life. And I looked at him, and I said, what do you mean? He said, do you remember when you were down at Denver Cares about 5 years ago? And I happened to have remembered it because they had moved it for just a couple of months and then brought it back into the hospital. And he said, it was over there on Spear Boulevard. And I said, yeah, I actually happen to remember that happening. And he said, I said, but you're not the guy I was talking to. He said, no, I know. He said, I was sitting in the corner. And I heard everything you said. He said, I also saw that your life was falling apart. And if you could stay sober through that, I wanted that. And he said, I got out of there and I went and I got a sponsor and I've been sober ever since. So see, what this thing is it's about carrying this message that saved my life because I never know where it's going to be used. That's God's job. It's not my job. It really isn't. I have tried to carry the drunk too. I have made every mistake 12-stepping and sponsoring a person can make. There was this guy named Michael who came in. And I just, you know, certain ones that you work with, you just fall in love with them immediately. You know, this guy had alcoholic poisoning, and he had been a meth head, and he had no teeth. And he was just, yeah, he was a wreck. And he was on SSI and the whole nine yards. And I don't know. I just fell in love with him. And I was carrying him around to meetings. And he'd been trying AA for many years. And he was only like in his late 30s at this time. And I carried him around to meetings. And I fed him. And I let him sleep on my couch. And I wouldn't let him go home. And I wanted to do all this stuff for him. And finally, about 3 weeks later, I let him go home. And I was going to get this guy sober. And Michael called me. And this is back before cell phones, no texting or anything like that. And he calls me at my home phone. I pick it up. It was like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And he says, you know, Mike, he says, I just really want to thank you for everything that you've ever done for me. And he said, I just love you to death. And he said, the reason I'm calling is I don't want to die alone. And I heard the gunshot. And he killed himself. And I got pissed. I got pissed at God. I got pissed at the program. And I said, I'm never going to help anybody again. I'm never going to do that. And I remember taking it to Frank. And Frank said, this is part of the disease. All you can do is go out there and share your experience. That's what you share. You share your experience. So that's why I do this stuff. That's why I come to these places. That's why I do some speaking. That's why I started a meeting in Parker. That's why I do what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous, is to try to carry a clear message that you can recover if you do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and get a relationship with God. I'm a huge believer in what Tarek was talking about earlier. You work the first 9 steps in order to clear away the shit that's blocking you from God. You grow in 10, 11, and 12. That's where I grow. I learn more from taking somebody through the steps than they do. Trust me. I really do. And I started this meeting in Parker. It's now my home group. It's Sunday morning, 11 a.m. Parker meeting. Actually, it'll kick off in about an hour. And I started this meeting because everything in Parker was, there's a treatment center right in downtown Parker, and everything is so geared around the new man. Everything's brand new man, brand new man, brand new man, you know. And I had all these guys coming to me with 2, 3, 5, 15, 17, 20 years who wanted to put guns in their mouths or they wanted to leave Alcoholics Anonymous or had left Alcoholics Anonymous and their life was falling apart. And they said to me, where do we go? Where do we go? Where do we get the message, the clear message of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? And so I started this meeting in Parker, and Bob comes to it, and I go to it, and Gary Kay goes to it, and there's a core of people in this meeting, and now we're attracting not only the people with 5 to 20 years who have left AA, but also the people who are brand new are starting to come in now and being picked up by the people with 5 and 10 years and their sponsor. It's really an absolutely amazing thing that's going on. It really is. If I just go out there and carry the message. And that's what you guys have the opportunity to do. You guys have the opportunity to go out there and carry a clear and precise message. And here's the one thing, and Paul Martin used to say this from the podium, the same 12 steps that got me sober will get me well at any time in my sobriety. They will do so. It's not bullshit, it's just fact. And, you know, that's really about all I got to say, because this is about carrying this message, and I think that's what you guys are here about. And I do, I feel like I'm in the special ops crew. So, you know, we're not fighting about it, we're not arguing about it, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. People are learning from it, and you've got some really strong people here who you can go to, and they're going to help you. And if they can't help you, they're going to put you in touch with the people that can. So just keep the courage of your convictions. Go back to your groups and don't just hang out in your little group of people that all work steps. Go out. Get out in AA. Go to these other meetings and sit down and shut up. And then if you get called on, or if it's one of those speak if you want to speak meetings, right? Is that what you guys got around here mostly? Or do you speak if you want to speak, they don't call on you? Frank used to say the first two people to talk in those meetings are always the sickest people in the room. I just want to tell you, so I was never the first to talk in those meetings, first or second.
I don't want to remove any doubt.
I don't want to, yeah. It may be there, but you know, I don't want people to see it. And get out there and just carry your message. Because the real work in this thing is when you get somebody across from you and they have dead eyes and you take them through this and all of a sudden you see the lights come on. I got a guy right now who's 17 years sober. He got sober in Omaha, Nebraska. He went through the steps. He has never done another step since. And he came to me and he said, I want to kill myself. And this guy's got a big IT job and he's got a beautiful wife and a great house and the whole night, his entire exterior looks perfect. And he wanted to kill himself. And he came to me and he said, can you help me? So we started to meet. And not just once a week. This guy needed it. So we met 3 times a week and we got him through the steps in about... He went 1 through 8 in about 3 weeks. And he went out there and he was making amends. And now the guy's on fire and the light's in his eye. And he's out there and he's 12-stepping people and he's sponsoring people and he's asking questions. So this thing is all about this message that saved my life. And how God got me here is just an absolute miracle. And I want to thank everybody for being here, and I'm done. Thank you.